It's Ideasphere with author and entrepreneur David M. Howitt. Heed your call.
Just trust the quieter voice a little bit. Go check it out. Take a couple steps in that direction. Go feel it. And what I have learned and seen in my life and the lives of these others that I've had the great pleasure of working with is the universe will reward you for taking those steps.
David M. Howitt's new book, Heed Your Call, is about embracing the power of and. It's for the person who has come to the place in life where they no longer want to toil away at the same job and want to create their own dream. Hello, I'm Guy Rothbun. Welcome to Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices with Mr. Howitt, founder and CEO of Merriweather Group. Mr. Howitt joins me for this show. Thanks so much for taking this time.
Thanks for having me, Guy. I really appreciate it.
You want us to lose this sense of separateness. This is what you're writing about in your book. The concept that we are going to be doing it alone and there's nothing we can do about it. And instead, you're saying we recognize and should understand the divine is there with us.
Absolutely true. You know, each one of us has a connection to each other, to the whole, and to our own innate divinity. And so we are never really alone. And I know for a lot of listeners, you know, that raises questions of religion, spirituality. You know, ego will pop up and say, okay, we've got a preacher in the line that's going to tell me how I need to live my life and what I need to believe in. And that's just not the case, Guy. It is true for every single one of us. We are innately connected to each other and innately connected to our own internal divinity. And that is with us always. And we don't need to go to a synagogue or a church or put a turban on or shave our head or say any particular prayer or incantation. It's just there for us. It's our birthright. And all we really need to do is allow ourselves a bit of quiet or time to connect with it. And it's right there for us.
Most of us don't understand that, though. It's this feeling of separateness that keeps us divided and aloof. And it also adds so much anxiety that you identified early on.
Absolutely true. And I think as Joseph Campbell in his great work on the hero's journey said, you know, we're all born into sort of our known world, our family, our own dysfunction, the community or neighborhood we live in. And for many of us, we assume that's what life is. This is my lot in life. This is what I am supposed to do. But the reality is, for each of us, there exists a much broader, and I would say much more authentic and rich path. But it does require us to take a leap of faith and to leave behind both the comforts and the pain, which we become addicted to both, of that known world, and cross the threshold and go on our own heroic journey.
It all sounds good. Someone reading your book is going to realize that you had that same situation occurring. So you're writing from a personal experience. You were stuck in what you felt was a go-nowhere job, in spite of the fact that many would look upon it and say, oh, a corporate lawyer? And you're thinking that's the wrong thing to do? But if we're not following our true selves, as you say, then we're not going to be satisfied no matter the result.
That's right. I mean, I think if we're not heeding our call, which is the name of my book, and we're not in alignment with our true purpose, at best, we're going to have a mediocre life where we fight hard, work hard, push and pull to kind of make it. A lot of us have been taught and brought up to believe that that is what we should do. The old kind of Protestant work ethic. Put your shoulder against the plow, and the harder you work and the more tired you are, the more successful you are. Well, my experience and the experience of many entrepreneurs and business owners that I've had the good pleasure of working with, advising and investing in, is that that is a lie. That when we align ourselves with our true purpose, and we allow ourselves to take that leap and to actually follow our call, to heed our call, we can have lives that are incredibly abundant and incredibly easy. I often say, ask yourself three questions. am I having fun? Am I seeing results? And is it easy? And if you can't answer yes to all three questions, step back, reconfigure your approach, get back into it, then ask yourself those three questions again. And if you can't answer yes to all three of them, do not continue doing it. Move on.
All right, but you faced it yourself as you were inquiring, why am I here? Why am I making this flight? Why am I wrestling with these decisions? Why can't I go against my father's wishes at this point? So there it goes back to what you're talking about, the Protestant work ethic and family divisions. But we have to look at this and say, and many of us do, what do we do with the financial side of it? Back to reality.
Yep. So what we do on the financial side is we have to trust that when we align with our purpose, that the money is going to follow. My experience, and again, I can just go by my experience, and really what I tried to do in Heed Your Call is I tried to write a book from personal experience and the experience of those that I've worked with, not from just the theory or theoretical. My experience is that when you follow your heart and you follow your passion, the money follows you. When you chase money or live in fear of not having it, the money will try to avoid you. And so by actually pursuing those things that you're passionate about and that are in alignment with your kind of soul's desire, we tend to be more financially abundant. By constantly living in fear of not having money or needing to earn more of it, we get out of alignment and we do not live authentically. And what happens is we have a world similar to the one we have now. Lots of people in poverty, many people in debt, and those that do have money feeling like they have no meaning or purpose in their life. Mm.
And that's a catch-22 we can easily be trapped in. Something you write about that I truly identified with, especially after reading a book most recently, within the last few years, on leading what was called the empathic life. And you're writing about the need to have empathy.
Absolutely. I think empathy is a key component to success in life. And it's something that unfortunately is not taught and or typically placed as an important part of parenting. But our ability to tap into and appreciate the hearts and minds and feelings of those around us in business and in life has been an incredibly important part of my success. You know, we talk a lot about IQ, kind of raw intellectual horsepower, kind of left brain, analytics, best practices, numbers, dotting I's, crossing T's, grades, test scores. But we place far less importance on right brain, kind of EQ, as opposed to IQ, emotional intelligence, empathy, meaning, purpose, soul, connection, and our ability to be creative and to be mindful. In my experience, it's not an or, what I call in the book Heed Your Call, or. It's and. It's using both of those things. You got to get up in the morning. You got to set your alarm clock. You balance your checkbook. You need to go to work and get the work done. But you also need to toggle over and bring into that experience your innate ability to empathize and to understand those around you, whether it be your consumer or your peer or your boss or your spouse. And our ability to be creative and to embrace purpose and meaning and culture. When you look at a company, let's say Apple Computer as an example, you know, they are the most valuable company in the history of commerce. And I would argue the reason is, at any given day, you can't tell me if they are a technology company or a beautiful consumer brand, artistic sort of consumer brand. And the reason is they're both. And when you're both, you win as an individual or as an enterprise.
In case you're just tuning in, talking with author and founder, CEO of Meriwether Group, David M. Howitt. His book is Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality, and Business. Mr. Howitt has 20 years of experience providing financial, strategic, and brand counsel to early stage and Fortune 500 companies. Mr. Howitt, you have a website, tweet, blog.
Thanks so much. So the website for my company is www.meriwethergroup, M-E-R-I, www.heathergroup.com. And for purposes of my book, you know, you can certainly go to heedyourcall.com, but it's also available on Amazon as well as in local bookstores under my name, David Howitt, or Heed Your Call.
Great.
Thanks so much for asking.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll have that posted at Public Radio Exchange, which brings up the subject of, if you just tuned in, you want to hear the beginning of this show, a couple of ways to do so. Go to Public Radio Exchange, prx.org, and check under Ideasphere, or go to National Public Radio's home site under Podcasts and Ideasphere. So you have a choice that way. If you have any questions, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. There are those who are going to read your work and say, wait a minute, I've read this through Joseph Campbell. Is there a difference here?
Absolutely. So let me first start by saying I have just the absolute highest respect for Joseph Campbell's work, and it was unequivocally very important and very much a key to a number of the comments and kind of theories and positions I take in Heed Your Call. Having said that, you know, Joseph's work was very much about the theory of how one can tie mythology to the real world. What I think I've done in Heed Your Call is taken Campbell's work, which, you know, as he said, applies to the hero. And historically, the hero was the knight or the sorceress, the wizard, the king. And he said, let's expand that definition to include the scientist and the artist. What I've done or tried to do in Heed Your Call is to say, let's take that work and apply it to business. Let's look at the world of the entrepreneur, the founder, the business owner, the executive, and let's overlay their experience against the hero's journey. And it's incredible. I mean, it's nothing short of one of those moments where like the hair stands up on the back of your neck. It's really amazing. And so I've used that as a central thesis, and then I've woven in to that spirituality, mythology, theology, and also science to show that there is really one language. We can use different words, but they all point to the same basic concepts. So in the book, Heed Your Call, I put forth 11 constructs that I see used every day in life and in business. And when we use those constructs, we have lives that are abundant and also filled with meaning and purpose. Those constructs can be demonstrated in mythology, demonstrated in science, demonstrated in the arts, demonstrated in psychology, demonstrated in science. They use different words, but they're the same constructs.
This is part of the integration you're talking about in your work.
100%, Guy. And so, again, unfortunately, we are not taught or nor are we brought up to think in an integrated way. We like to put things in bright line buckets. We prefer to say, this is a technology company. This is a consumer brand. I go to yoga and practice yoga, but when I roll up my mat at the yoga studio, I'm now done practicing yoga and I go home. Let's have life-work balance. Let's compartmentalize when I go to work versus when I come home. And as a result, we have these sort of schizophrenic existences of these many buckets, where the reality is we simply have something called life. And the word yoga means union. It does not mean compartmentalize. So it's not as if you go to your yoga class and you do your asana practice and then you roll up your practice as you roll up your mat and leave it there. You unionize that and harmonize it in the way you go to work, in the way that you parent, in the way that you interact with your friends or spouse, and with the world. And so what I've tried to do with the book Heed Your Call is to show us how we can integrate these things that are typically compartmentalized so as to actually create a whole and rich life that allows us to use all of the tools we have instead of only using some of them some of the time.
When you're talking about yoga, you say that you can be a yogi and an executive at the same time by bringing forward the power of and.
100%. So I am a big proponent, and I've seen in my life and in the world that and is what allows us to have lives that are rich and abundant and also filled with meaning and purpose. Or is tyranny, or causes us to choose, it causes us to judge, it tends to put us in a place of ego, and it limits our lives. So I am an individual who drives a very nice car, has a nice home, has enjoyed many of the luxuries of life, travel and the like. I work very hard. I'm part of a successful company. I've been involved in many successful businesses. And I also have a meditation practice. I have tattoos. I enjoy art and theater. I have deep relationships with my friends and family. I have a yoga practice. I can go listen to live music. Typically, our culture, our educational systems tell us, no, you can't do that. You either have tattoos and you sleep on a futon and you don't have any money and you're a hippie who enjoys art and theater and music, or you're a wealthy executive with lots of toys and a big bank account, but you have no meaning and purpose in your life, and you certainly don't have any tattoos or go out and listen to, to live music. Guy, that, in my estimation, is a lie. And it's a limiting belief system, and that belief system is not going to get us to where we need to be as a society. It is broken. It is not about what we need to be embracing and doing in order to take the world and culture to a sustainable and healthy place.
Well, this goes right back to the empathic life we were talking about a moment ago. What gets in our way, this is exactly the issue of the futon and the tattoo. Yep. That we judge. And what we're doing when we judge others is actually trying in some way to bolster our own self-confidence.
I think that for a lot of us, we live in a place of fear, we live in a place of anxiety, and so if we can kind of tell ourselves stories through judging, we allow ourselves momentarily to feel more secure, less afraid, less alone. But I say momentarily because it is only for that moment. And then we fall deeper into a deeper place of fear, anxiety, and despair, because the more we judge, the further separated we become from our connection to the divinity in ourselves and in everyone else. So we get a short-term relief at the cost of living a long-term inauthentic life. And let me share with you a couple examples. So I did some research for the book, Heed Your Call, and one of the research subjects was a number of end-of-life caregivers, primarily from hospice. And uniformly, what they told me is that when people reached the end of their lives, the single most consistent and biggest sort of regret was, I didn't take a shot. I lived my life in servitude to someone else's belief of what I should do or should be. I played it safe. I live from a place of fear. I live from a place of anxiety. I live from a place of judgment. And as a result, I mailed it in. Not one person said, from all of the interviews I did, I shouldn't have taken that chance. I shouldn't have reached out and taken that shot. I should have played it safe. I should have done what my mom or dad or teacher or society or neighborhood thought I should do. Not one said that. I believe the biggest failure we can have as an individual is to reach the end of our lives and look back and say, I lived inauthentically. I didn't take the chance. I didn't give it a shot.
David M. Howitt, Heed Your Call. This is Ideasphere, a platform for today's voices. We'll be right back. You're back with Ideasphere, David M. Howitt, Heed Your Call. if we can reach into your book here, in the section you have on welcoming the unknown, you quote Jay Stone, and you say in his quote, "I know there are those artists whose medium is life itself." And that's what you're saying.
That's exactly right. Life is art. We paint our own canvas. And to stay with the sort of artist metaphor, I think for a lot of us, and I have been certainly guilty of this, you think of an artist stretching a canvas, artists will sit there with a blank stretched canvas and just sit there with the uncertainty of what that canvas is going to be. For many, many, many of us, that's almost impossible. It's so difficult. We are urged, every ounce of our ego, every societal, educational, and parenting sort of notion says, get painting, go start painting. We would do well to sit there with that anxiety, sit there with the pain of the blank canvas. Allow yourself to breathe. Get in touch with your quieter, all-knowing, centered self. It's there for all of us. We all know it. Now, we'll do a tremendous amount to not listen to that voice. We will gamble. We will get addicted to social media. We will drink. We will work out. We will eat. We will shop. Some things are quote-unquote good. Some things are quote-unquote bad. But they're all done to prevent us from actually getting in touch with that centered, all-knowing, quiet place, because we're scared of that. Ego is scared of that place. That place says, live your life fully.
The other side of that is that we are also frightened of the unknown. I mean, this is something that holds us back so frequently. If we can't see that path in front of us, how do we take that first step? And so you write about that in Welcoming the Unknown by Trusting and Surrendering.
I think trust and surrender, which again, historically are thought of as weakness, are actually one of the greatest strengths that we can exhibit. Now, I'm not saying go jump off a bridge and trust you're going to be okay. So ego steps in and says, oh, sure, it's easy to trust and surrender when you got a big bank account. What I'm talking about is when you hear that voice inside that says, hey, go check this out. Go try this. And then the other voice pops up on the other shoulder and says, you're going to go broke. Your wife's going to divorce you. Your kids are going to think you're a failure. Just trust the quieter voice a little bit. Go check it out. Take a couple steps in that direction. Go feel it. And what I have learned and seen in my life and the lives of these others that I've had the great pleasure of working with is the universe will reward you for taking those steps. It will start to show you that it is in alignment with your taking that chance, in that alignment of your moving into that place of unknown. It will do that by providing you with mentors and guides. It will do that by opening doors where they were closed previously. Take notice, be grateful, and watch for those things. There's a great quote by a famous psychiatrist that says, when you feel yourself falling, jump. So many of us, when we feel ourselves falling, grab on. And sometimes we should do the very opposite and let go.
And repair the world.
And in doing so, Guy, we repair the world. You are absolutely correct.
This is the matrix of what your work is about. And one reading it is not going to really have the aha moment of reaching that matrix until the latter part of your book. And it's what you're talking about, the accepting of heroism, and you're using the fact that we can create our, and the phrase is not going to be familiar, it's the Tycoon Omen?
Ultimately, yes, I'm interested in this work trying to help us individually. It certainly helped me and many others that I know. And unlike, I think, a lot of the books out there, this is not just theory. This is real-world stuff. It's very powerful stuff. And yes, it can help us individually. But really what I'm interested in is when enough of us start living from the place of centered, knowing, purpose, and alignment, not only do we have better lives, but we actually heal the world. So your point is, again, in the research I've done for the book, meeting with people from every spiritual and religious discipline and tons of reading, I looked at the kind of Judeo-Christian liturgy, and there is a well-known within that community phrase called Tikkun Olam, which you referenced, which literally translates into repair the world. Now, most people have interpreted that as, okay, Tikkun Olam means philanthropy. it means being philanthropic. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong. In fact, there's a lot of good that comes from people writing checks and being philanthropic. But that's not what the phrase means. If you read further, the way the liturgy writes and speaks is the way to create Pikum Olam is to return to the Ruach Elohim, which translates into breath of God, that is within each of us. So when you read that as a whole and you talk with scholars of this liturgy, what they'll say is, we are told that the way we repair the world is to return to our own divinity within each of us. The Sanskrit term that is commonly used at the end of every yoga class, namaste, which literally translates into the divinity in me honors the divinity in you. When we finally return to a place where we work from our own Ruach Elohim, our own breath of God, we connect with everyone else, we live in alignment with our soul's purpose, what the Buddhists call our Dharma, and in doing so, not only do we have abundant and authentic lives, but we actually repair the world.
Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality, and Business. That website one more time.
Go to www.heedyourcall.com or to Amazon and search Heed Your Call or certainly to bookstores or visit my company's website, which is www.meriwethergroup, MeriWeatherGroup.com.
And again, we'll have that posted at Public Radio Exchange where you can hear this program from the beginning. One of the things that caught my attention immediately, it's the stickler I have, you might say.
Please.
And that is, we in our society today tend to lose the sight on the value of listening. We tend to be thinking of what we're going to say rather than hearing our other person. You're turning around and saying, listen intently. We need to return to that.
100%. And it is when we allow ourselves to listen that we actually get our biggest insights and the most clarity around where we should go and how we should get there. And again, ego will pop up and say, well, I can't go join an ashram or go to a one-month silent retreat. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about every day taking a few minutes where you turn off your cell phone, where maybe you go put your feet in the grass, or you go for a walk in the woods, or you look up at the night sky, where we take a few minutes and allow ourselves the luxury of tapping in instead of going out. And when we do that, we catch immediate glimpses of who we are and what we are capable of being.
Thank you, Mr. Howitt. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and reading your work.
Thank you so much, Guy. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
My guest has been David M. Howitt, Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality, and Business. It's now available in hardcover. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, write to me at rathbunproductions@gmail.com. This program is a distribution of Public Radio Exchange, prx.org. For Ideasphere, I'm Guy Rathbun.